Welcome to the latest Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. And now, here's your host, Michael Loft. Tech Chat number 63 for May 20, 2010. This is Michael Loft. Tonight's topic, we want to give you the relevant information so that you can make an informed decision about what's best for you and your needs, be it Microsoft Windows or the Macintosh, or maybe a mix of both to accomplish everything that you want or need to do. We have three guests tonight joining us via Skype. Peter Bosley, our good old reliable man here, Mr. Ohio State University there in Columbus. Thank you for joining us tonight, Peter.
Sure, glad to be here.
And we have Justin Romack, who some of you may have heard on a podcast that was comparing various Twitter clients for the iPhone. We welcome you tonight, Justin. Go ahead and say hi so they can get acclimated to your voice.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Michael, for having me.
You are very welcome, sir. And from Sydney, Australia, we have Mr. Scott Rakowski joining us.
Yep, thanks for having me here, man.
Tonight, we're going to try to demystify. There's a lot of misinformation going around about what can and cannot be done when it comes to the Macintosh. And I think there's a variety of reasons why that is, and I want to talk about that before we get started. The motivation for this was a weekly group of about 30 people that meet. There's been a lot of information saying the Mac is not accessible, or parts of it are, but you can't browse the web, you can't do this, you can't do that. I think there's a few factors for that. I think there's people that are afraid of change. I think there are actually people who sell copies of Windows screen readers who are intentionally disseminating misinformation because, you know, they lose their nice little commission on those $800 to $1,200 sales. I think a lot of people just go hearsay. So maybe someone went in a store and played with a Mac, but it's not something you're going to just get in 2 minutes. Whatever the reason is, we want to give relevant information. That's why we brought three people who use both and accurately give you real information so that you can truly make an educated and informed decision. And so with that being the case, my first question for each of the three of you, and I will start with Peter, what things do you do or like best with each operating system?
Definitely on the Mac, I am much more likely to use that for media type consumption, watching video, listening to music. iTunes on the Mac is very accessible, I would say even more than it is on Windows. Web surfing, my social networking stuff, most of my email will be fun on the Mac. The only thing I really find myself using Windows for is stuff related to work.
Okay, that's interesting. So when you say work, you mean in the workplace or just anytime you're logging into work if you do that remotely?
If I have to log into work remotely, yeah, I have to use Windows. If I'm processing a large Word document or doing anything heavy like producing PowerPoint presentations or anything like that, definitely that happens on Windows. And the IT administration stuff is largely on Windows.
Justin, I understand you've been computing for 7-8 years, but just came into the Mac in the last year or so. Is that correct? And kind of what else would you like about each?
I got a MacBook Pro for graduation last December, and I was a little bit nervous about it because it was a pretty big investment. And like you mentioned, there is a lot of misinformation and there's a lot of hearsay. And so I went out on a whim and I thought, well, let's give it a shot. You know, I loved my iPhone and I knew iTunes was going to be a little bit easier to use on the Mac. So I gave it a shot. And like Peter, I use it for media consumption. iTunes is a pleasure to use on the Mac. I will also do a lot of web surfing on the Mac and my mail. I primarily use the mail app on the Mac side. For Windows, I do a lot of word processing still. I've used some of the word processing applications on Mac, but I still prefer Windows for that, especially with a lot of the formats that I work with. There's a couple things I can't get access to on the Mac side. I use Napster for purchasing music, and I have a subscription with them, and so there's no alternative on the Mac side.
Okay, Scott, what about you, sir?
On the Mac, I watch video on the Mac. I use iTunes on the Mac. Prefer it than on Windows. It's more accessible, just easier to get around the interface. I use Mac Mail pretty much because with Windows 7, I just haven't found the email client that I like, and Mac Mail just works really well. And on the Windows side, I pretty much use it for work to log into certain web interfaces that unfortunately don't work that great in Safari. But on the Windows side, they work fine with system access. And I also use my TV tuner card on Windows because I haven't found an accessible product for the Mac at this time.
Okay, so you watch TV on demand, videos and things on the Mac, but as far as live TV, you got to use the Windows TV tuner card. Guys, I want to go to email because Windows 7 really does not. It's a great operating system, but really does not have a built-in quality email client. I mean, you got Windows Live Mail. I'm not impressed with it.
Mac Mail connects to almost every major email provider, with maybe the sole exception of some older Exchange servers. But it works very well with that. The application is fully accessible, and everything that Apple intends for it works properly. As with most things on the Mac, there's a little bit of a learning curve, and so I encourage people to be patient with that. But if you can get over that, it works very well, and I haven't had any trouble accessing any email that I use.
Yeah, I agree with everything that Peter said. Like any application in Mac, you are going to have to be patient. The interface is really smooth. I feel like I have access to everything I need, and it's really easy to find messages. I love the search feature. It works great. I don't feel like the application is sluggish. I felt like a lot of the times when I would use mail clients in Windows, the app would just kind of drag along. So I feel like it's a breeze to find what I need.
Yeah, I agree with Justin and Peter. I actually like Mac Mail, especially with IMAP. On the Windows side, IMAP works, but I just find it to be a little bit sluggish and slow if you've got, say, 8 years worth of email sitting there. But on the Mac, it's very, very snappy, works really well. Plus, I can read all my mail on the iPhone, so I get the best of both worlds.
Okay, let's demystify web browsing. This is one that seems to keep coming up that you cannot do it on the Macintosh or that there's limitations to it. So I want to start with you, Peter, kind of explain the process or what people need to get their heads around, how it's similar or differs from Windows, or maybe changes that you need to make it function right.
The reason why people tend to think that you can't browse the web on the Mac is because the screen reader paradigm in Mac OS X is a shift for people that have used Windows for any length of time. For the vast majority of things, you cannot tab around like you can in Windows. There's not a tab order in web pages such that it is fully navigable, even if the tab order has been properly defined, which, as we all know, is pretty unlikely. There are a couple of keystrokes. The voiceover plus left and the voiceover plus right keys are important throughout the operating system, not just in the web browser. There's also a command in the latest version of the operating system, which is OS X Snow Leopard, which is the voiceover U command, which is, I guess, similar to some of the insert plus F7 commands in some of the Windows screen readers. It'll show you headings, it'll show you form fields, it'll show you things like that, and you can just kind of arrow around and press enter on the things you want to jump to. So once you get your head around that, you can jump around web pages on the Mac pretty easily.
You brought up searching, and they've improved it a bit in Windows 7, but Mac has this concept of the Finder, and I mean, where you can multiple items, even on the same web page, a pretty powerful tool. So kind of talk about how you search in each operating system, what you find to be most effective.
There's a find function on web pages in Windows and in OS X.
You see, a lot of people use the item chooser.
I use item chooser.
You got Control F in Windows, which is great. It takes you to the next item that matches that. But the item chooser brings up everything that would be in that partial search.
And you could just start typing. So if you're looking for like the logout link, you could just start typing logout, and it'll jump you to logout.
Control Option I is for item chooser. But you can actually use that anywhere in the operating system, too.
The voiceover U command brings up a list of the web page elements, and it'll have different tabs on it. It'll have headings, form fields, visited links, unvisited links.
Graphics.
And you can do the same thing in there. You can just start typing in that dialogue, and it'll just jump.
Two questions. Now, one person, partially sighted, said their problem with the Macintosh is that it doesn't visually display or show to him. He can't delineate the visited versus unvisited links.
VoiceOver U displays a list on the screen visually, and there's a different tab for visited and unvisited links. As far as web pages go, they obey what the web developer has defined. So if the web developer has defined clearly different colors, they should show different. Or web pages generally appear the same in OS X as they do in Windows, unless they're using some kind of dynamic thing that doesn't work well with Safari. I would have to get a handle on the individual person we're talking to figure out what they're having issues with. That sounds kind of strange to me.
Let's talk about social networking. You know, Facebook, you have partial, but I don't know anyone with full access. And the last time I played with it on the Mac seemed to have Windows beat in that space. Are any of you working with Syrinx, which is the Mac equivalent for communicating with Twitter? You have this app called ADM, which interfaces with your Windows Live Messenger, your AIM, your Facebook, even Skype, or just navigating the Facebook website with Mac versus Windows. Do any of you have any thoughts on that whole kind of social networking between the computers?
I actually have been messing around with Facebook a lot in the last couple of weeks. We do a lot of ad campaigns via Facebook for the band that I'm playing with. on Mac, when I had originally gotten my Mac, a lot of folks said, you know, the full site is actually not that accessible and it's difficult to use. But let's just be honest, even fully sighted individuals don't understand Facebook.
Part of the reason why Facebook works better on the Mac as it does on Windows is Safari doesn't support some of the crazy stuff Facebook's doing with Internet Explorer. So in order to make Facebook available to Mac users, Facebook has had to kind of dial back on some of the things that they're doing. I think that leads to some greater accessibility on the Safari platform.
I'm using Syrinx on the Mac side and really enjoy that. Use Quitter on the Windows side. So if I had to take my pick, I would probably choose Quitter, but Syrinx works well, and I love using it. I also use iChat for my instant messaging.
iChat actually is a pretty powerful application if you play with it. In fact, you can even use it with some tools to do remote access. And I did that once and remoted into someone's computer about a year ago. And I had his speech, so I had to turn off my speech, and I could hear his speech. And even played some music from his iTunes library, so it had audio transmission capabilities.
What's nice about iChat is that since Apple's implemented standard elements on that application, iChat is another one of those things that's fully accessible.
Speaking of chat, is there anything else you're using on either side, Skype or Ventrilo, which work both in Windows and Mac, or anything that you go back to Windows for, maybe the Samnet chats?
I don't use much as far as voice chat goes. If I do anything, it's Skype. I haven't tried Skype on the Mac yet. On Windows for IM, I use Miranda, which works pretty well, but I prefer iChat.
I'm actually using Skype on my Mac right now. I love using it. It's a breeze.
I think it sounds better. When I plug my microphone into Skype, I don't know why, but it just technically sounds better.
It's a great program, and it works well. I feel like on either side, I just prefer Mac.
So Apple's audio drivers are better than the Windows stuff.
Okay, so Peter, explain, as you were talking about Miranda, is Miranda for Windows kind of the equivalent of Adium on the Macintosh side, where it kind of is a bridge between different messaging portals, right?
Yeah, Miranda is a multi-protocol compliant instant message application for Windows. It's open source. There are a few plugins that make it a lot more accessible, and some scripts are on their way if I can wrap my head around a couple things of how they're doing things and get those finished. They get put on the back burner when life interrupts.
So none of you are really doing anything in the audio space. There's Amadeus is a nice recorder on the Mac that I've been using. Not quite up there with SoundForge, but if you don't have the bucks or need to do something as advanced as Pro Tools, and we are going to do a music or multi-track podcast at some point in the future as they roll out Pro Tools. And, of course, there's a project on the Windows side called Reaper that a lot of folks have been playing around with. You've got Audio Hijack, where you can actually pipe different audio forms. So say if you want to record maybe your microphone and the audio from Skype, but not VoiceOver, or you want to hear your audio from iTunes and nothing else, you can do that. There's a company called RogueAmoeba.com that has a lot of cool stuff. They're making the Audio Hijack. They have an app for doing XM Sirius, Pulsar Nicecast for actually broadcasting your audio. There's something called Fission, which is for different codecs, switching from one platform to another, not to get too geeky. So there's definitely some options for folks who like to play around with audio. I want to go move to word processing and spreadsheets. Peter, you said you tend to gravitate toward Windows. I believe you and Justin both said that.
Yeah, if it's anything heavy, I do. I've started to try to learn how to use iWork because of the iPad version that I have. It's just easier. I've been a Windows user for 10, 12 years now, so it's easier for me to jump into Microsoft Word and bang, 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 I'm done. I just got to force myself to work with the Mac side a little bit more.
Mac has the built-in text edit, which will actually open Word documents. I remember looking at my son's resume written in Office 2007. Of course, the formatting wasn't quite right, so I wouldn't send it out that way, but you could certainly view it and see what was there. Nicest Writer Pro. There's a free one called Bean, a spreadsheet app called Tables. Of course, you have the OpenOffice.org.
I messed with OpenOffice a little bit, but some of their stuff uses a custom GUI toolkit, so it wasn't working so well for me.
I do use TextEdit. The problem that I have with word processing, and this is just me being a worrywart, the formatting scares me. And so if I want to send something out and I want to be absolutely certain that it's the way I want it, then I'm going to have to use Microsoft Word.
And when you're doing something like a resume, it better be exactly the way you want it.
That's always an age-old issue of how it views on a different computer.
A suggestion I would have is if you save in a format that's not a proprietary format, RTF, HTML, something like that, generally speaking, it's going to come out the way it's supposed to.
Sounds like you guys are using the Mac more of an entertainment, and you're still leaning toward Windows for productivity tools. Am I correct on that assertion?
I think this might be a personal thing. I've been a Windows user for so long that it's a big shift for me. So yes, productivity-wise, especially Office and Excel and things like that, this is not to say that the stuff on the Mac isn't solid. It's just hasn't been quite adopted yet.
There's kind of a graduation, if you will. You get your Mac, you've been using Windows for years, and you do one thing, and then you do another, and then you try something else, and you kind of just add on, and either you use both or you decide, I like this better on the Mac, or I'll stick with Windows. Windows, you add on. You get System Access or WindowEyes or JAWS or maybe the free NVDA. But the Macintosh, you have this voice over screen reader built in. So let's talk about that a little bit. I'll start with you, Peter, about, A, how you turn it on and even that there's a little tutorial when you first set up your Mac that it would be wise to go ahead and listen to that and follow along with it and kind of get up to speed on how it works. But it's included. You do not pay extra for that.
We can't overstress how great that is. A mainstream company, including Screen Access, out of the box. They don't charge any more for it. It's included for anybody that wants to use it. When you start your Mac up for the first time, when you take it out of the box, if you do not do anything to it for a few minutes after it starts up, the Mac will assume that you can't read the screen, and it'll start speaking, and it'll walk you through the initial setup process, what those of you that have seen a Windows setup process know as the out-of-box experience. And once you complete that, VoiceOver will start automatically, and it will ask you about a tutorial. Now your first instinct is going to be, oh, I want to play with my new computer, I'm going to skip the tutorial. Resist the urge. The speech is slow and it's kind of annoying at times, but basic concepts that they're going to teach you in this tutorial will help you not want to throw the Mac out the window a half hour later. So I promise it's worth it.
Yeah, how about you, Justin? You said you just came into it a little bit over a year ago. How long did it take you to get up to speed? Did you do the tutorial? Or did you learn the hard way or go on email lists? Or how did you put it together?
I did a culmination of everything. I started with the tutorial. I feel like in a week and a half, I really had a solid grasp on the Mac. And it wasn't because, you know, I'm some super expert at the Mac. I played with this thing for hours and hours and hours because I wanted it to work out. And I didn't want to lose my $1,500, let's be honest. I found that the tutorial was great. Being able to start up anyone's Mac and just press Command F5 and get on a Mac is great. But also the thing that really impressed me is within a week, I took my Mac back to get a version with a bigger hard drive and a faster processor and whatnot. And I did a Time Machine backup just from that first week. And oh gosh, that process was awesome. So just having that just integrated into the system and so seamlessly integrated is awesome.
Time Machine is Apple's built-in backup utility. Once it's set up and configured, if you've got an external drive or something plugged into it, you can tell the backup utility just to keep your stuff backed up and keep my hands off of it. And it'll keep snapshots of your machine. It'll keep previous versions of your files. This probably works best with the Apple Time Capsule devices, but I'm sure that it works with regular external drives as well. What's very cool about this is if you have an issue with your machine, if your hard drive dies and you need to get a new drive, all you need to do when you start your Mac up after it's been reloaded is it'll ask you, are you restoring this from an old backup? You say, yeah. And it'll say, locate your Time Machine backup. You browse to your external drive. Boom, your system's back to the way it was before.
Not only that, but there's two pieces of software that I think take Time Machine to the next level. There's a free one called Carbon Copy Cloner, and this one I use called Super Duper, which is also free, but I think if you pay them whatever, $27 or whatever, they give you some added features like to do scheduling, which I don't even do anyway, but I wanted to support the company. But what you do then is not only do you make a backup on an external hard drive, but you can actually boot off that, so you could have a different version of your Mac, or like Peter said, right, if your hard drive failed on you, but you still had work to get done, you could actually load a copy of your working Macintosh from this external drive, and I've done it. I let it run and used it all weekend. It works, even the Windows side of it. And that's something else we got to talk about is that you have to choose. A lot of people have got Macs because, well, they don't want to give up Windows, but there are some options to let you run Windows on your Macintosh, either or situation, either Mac or Windows, by something called Bootcamp or by buying a piece of software called VMware Fusion that you can literally, they call it Command Tab. For those who hear the word Command, that's kind of the same as the Windows Alt key. You basically can move between Windows and Mac just as you might move between applications and Windows. That's a very powerful feature. Likewise, if you have to reinstall your system, unlike Windows, you can do it yourself. You can put in a disk, wait, you have to wait a little while, but then you hit that Command F5 and you actually have speech and you can install it all by yourself without eyesight. Apple's to be commended for that. That is something that is a capability that we need in Windows. Now, there are ways to kind of automate the process, and Peter probably has a pretty good background in that, doing it for a university. But it's not for the end user. Most people are not going to know how to put together something to install a copy of Windows without having a pair of eyes available to assist them for some prompts that don't have speech. Now, maybe you can do an upgrade, and we have some audio files here to talk about, like how to upgrade from Vista to Windows 7. But other than system access or the screen readers, you have to uninstall the screen reader, then upgrade. And that assumes that you want to upgrade instead of doing what's called a clean install. So it's one of the things that really impresses me with the Mac. I've been searching for years for quality ways to back up my data. It's important. You know, if you're working, you depend on that computer. I can't tell you how many times, especially when I worked with the Better Business Bureau, and then people would call and I'd say, well, do you have access to the internet to go to our website? No, my computer's down. It's broke. It's a very powerful feature. I just can't speak highly enough about that capability to back up and restore and manage your files and your software and your whole operating system. There's different types of Macintosh computers, but why don't, Peter, you want to explain those? I mean, you have the Mac Mini, which is the more economical. Here you got a computer complete with the built-in screen reader starting at $599, or maybe you want something a little more robust like your own portable notebook, if you will, called the MacBook, and then the MacBook Pro. You actually have a computer, which maybe if you're partially sighted might be a good investment, called the iMac, which has a really large screen. It's a one-piece unit, 27-inch. You know, if you have partial vision, you've got the screen reader built in with screen enlargement.
We'll go over the product lines real quick here. We've got a Mac Mini, which is...
it's slightly bigger than an external hard drive.
It's a big external hard drive, and it's got some USB ports on the back. It's got a mini display port, which you can convert to a DVI or a VGA. It's got an Ethernet port on it, and it's got built-in wireless and a DVD drive. Mac Minis are something that are good for entry-level media PCs. I don't know that I'd recommend it as a full-fledged computer. For a little bit more money, you could get a laptop. Justin, what do you think about that? I've never been a big fan of the Minis.
I'm using a Mini as a media machine. It's hooked up to my TV via HDMI. For entertainment stuff, my wife's actually downstairs watching Hulu on it right now. It's a great entertainment machine, but I wouldn't use it as my primary machine.
Yeah, I would put one in my entertainment center and hook it up to my TV, but I can't see myself using it as a primary machine. Right. That having been said, I have a feeling like we're of the geek quotient, and maybe some end users wouldn't have an issue with that.
I know quite a few folks who are using a Mac Mini as a primary machine, so that's not to slight them at all. I just don't think it offers enough power for what I do.
Yeah, that's the key. If you just browse the web, email, listen to a little bit of audio, maybe it'll meet your needs. Would you put it maybe a little more powerful, but maybe in the category of like a netbook, and that it's more of a consumption machine rather than a production machine?
Yeah, that's a fair assessment, absolutely.
Next up, we have the MacBook, which has just gone through a refresh at Apple. These start at $999, I believe. It's a plastic computer, plastic laptop computer. They're built fairly sturdily, so don't take that plastic as an insult. Generally speaking, they have the same specs as the 13-inch MacBook Pros. Basically, the only difference between those and the MacBook Pro are, I think they don't have a FireWire port.
Also true. I have a MacBook Pro that I bought. It's a 13-inch MacBook Pro, and it's a very attractive machine.
Right, so for $200 more, right, you get to what, $1,199, you're actually going aluminum?
This thing is carved out of one solid block of aluminum, and I have dropped this thing on hard surfaces, and I don't even get scared anymore. It's like, well, as long as the hard drive didn't get messed up, I'm golden.
I just bought one, and it is amazing. It is just different from any computer you've ever felt or worked with, and the keys are very nice. I know you can look at $1,199 and think that's a lot of money, but when you're comparing the price, think about... it's a pretty powerful computer, but also, if you're buying a Windows machine, you're also buying a screen reader. And that screen reader is built in there for you. So keep all of that in mind, you know, as you're assessing this. What about the support? You know, contacting Apple for help versus contacting Microsoft for help with your Windows when it's not working right.
Do people actually call Microsoft?
I doubt it. I think they've tried, and you get someone in India, and they charge for that, right? They're still on hold, yeah. But Apple, I mean, and it's not perfect. There are some folks that have more knowledge of voiceover than others, or some are smart enough to put you on hold and go get someone who has a background in that. So your mileage is going to vary a little bit. By and large, you're going to find the level of tech support with Apple far superior than anything you'd ever get at Microsoft.
I think it comes with 90 days of tech support, and if you want more, you got to buy AppleCare.
That's correct, and I think the AppleCare replacement, I believe that's for a year. So you've got the 90 days to call in the phone support, and then I think you get the year.
Right, you get 1 year of support on the device itself.
Right.
That is correct, and you can buy their AppleCare 3 years of support.
doesn't AppleCare give you 2 years of warranty and tech support? I felt like that included.
Yeah, you get both. Right. You get phone support and replacement. Okay. Now, keep in mind, it's replacement if the machine defects in some way. It's not if you drop in the bathtub
accidental damage protection with AppleCare. Don't make the mistake of assuming that. That's not a true statement.
We talked about the last time there was a service called SquareTrade that some people were using to actually get warranties that would actually compensate you if the machine were actually damaged.
What's nice about AppleCare, and if you've got an Apple store in your area, think about this, is that you can walk in to Apple and say, I'm having an issue with my laptop. They will diagnose the laptop for you. Now, some stores you need an appointment at, but they will diagnose the laptop for you. And if they determine that there's an issue, they will either swap it out with a new machine for you on the spot, or they will swap the part that they need to swap.
Exactly. They can't fix it right there. They'll give you another one on the spot. It is a quick turnaround. You're not going to be down a long period of time, but it is something you have to think in mind. Are you in a close proximity to an Apple store? I am not. I have to travel at least 2 hours. So that is something you need to keep in mind. But they will support the product as far as if there's any defects in it, anything goes wrong with it, they get that taken care of for you. So, but you have to decide if it's worth it. It's a chunk of change. But people who have had it and needed it were certainly glad that they did. I can tell you that.
I'll tell you, I bought my Mac from Best Buy, and I did their Geek Squad protection. And I don't know comparatively how much it is to AppleCare, but it actually covers accidental. I was closer to a Best Buy than I was an Apple store. So that was the route that I chose.
Never been a big fan of Geek Squad protection, but on the other hand, on a laptop like that, it's probably well worth it.
This is probably the first time that I've done it and have been not so concerned about it.
Melissa.
Okay, Melissa, in our tech chat.
Got a Mac not that long ago, a MacBook Pro, and I'm loving it. The only thing I'm wondering, is there a way to scroll line by line on a web page like there is in Windows?
And there are two different modes, so you can change that mode, which might help you. It moves in this document object model, so it's elements, and as you probably learned, Melissa, they can be different depending on what page you're on. It could be a paragraph, could be sentence.
The short answer to your question is that I'm not aware of any way to do that easily.
Probably should also mention that you interact with the screen completely different on a Mac. You actually have to kind of tell the Mac and tell VoiceOver what you're interacting with. So I think if you interact with the actual text, you should be able to interact with an item. You're going to hold down the VoiceOver keys, control and option with shift, and then down arrow.
It's Mike here. That does work.
Yeah,
actually,
no,
that's
good call on that.
You have to get used to. VoiceOver will move item by item on a page. But now if you want to read it a line at a time, which I do sometimes when I'm looking at song lyrics, if you interact with that block of text, then you can read it a line at a time.
Jess.
Okay, Jess, your question, sir.
To Peter about Facebook, he said that Safari didn't really support a lot of what Facebook was doing with Internet Explorer, and that made it more accessible. What exactly does Safari lack support for?
Safari handles updates to the web page a little bit differently, and since VoiceOver is so well integrated with OS X, it tends to notice the things that change on the web page better than Windows screen readers do. The way the Internet Explorer browser works and the way screen readers have to interact with it is a little bit technically complex. When Facebook updates an element on the page, say when you click on add someone as a friend or something like that, it's difficult for a screen reader to grab focus in those areas. Since Safari works a little bit differently that way, it tends to be a little bit easier to move around Facebook on Safari.
So you might be able to get more results from Facebook, but again, you still have to seek those out. You have to go and interact and keep moving around and looking for elements that have updated, whether they may not be automatically spoken.
Right? The item chooser is my best friend when it comes to Facebook. I really enjoy the item chooser, and I will say that you actually, again, you have to know what you're looking for. That's even an issue for sighted individuals.
What is the key equivalent of Control-Shift-Home or Control-Shift-End on the Mac?
I hold down Function, Control, Option, Left, and Left will take you to the top. Right will take you to the bottom.
You see a lot of times in Windows, you know, the screen readers, they customize each application. Like, they'll have commands in Skype to, you know, read the last message or, you know, in Messenger. VoiceOver takes a bit of a different approach. What Apple has done is provided you a set of commands that will work across, you know, as many applications as possible. There's really not keys specific to each application as much, but the flip side of that is you see in Windows all the time, you know, an application's upgraded and the script files, the set files have to be updated. With VoiceOver, that's not near as much of an issue.
He's right. VoiceOver is designed such that if you learn to use VoiceOver, just about any application in the Mac is going to be accessible. So I actually do agree with him on that. On the flip side of that, that actually makes it kind of challenging for folks to learn it. So I really think that it makes it a little bit steeper of a learning curve, but I think in the end it's probably better.
But how is that different from Windows? So what you're saying is that you really need to learn the screen reader first, and then when you master and learn all that you can about VoiceOver, then browsing the web, you know, interacting with any audio app or anything is going to be easier once you have those VoiceOver commands.
I guess what we're saying is there's not scripting in VoiceOver. So it's not like, say you go into Skype and you gotta use special commands to move around. If you know how to move around one application, you can pretty much move around them all.
Like you said, a good or a bad thing, because in Windows, there's some applications I have to learn a completely different set of hotkeys. You know, there's some that are just dozens and dozens of hotkeys. And so if, you know, I haven't used that application in a couple weeks or months, I have to go relearn those hotkeys. Whereas VoiceOver, I'm interacting with each application the same way. So for me, that makes things a little less complicated. But then again, you have to learn that the VoiceOver commands.
And it's hard. I mean, it's not easy.
No, most definitely. Especially if you've come from a previous system. That, again, makes the learning curve even steeper, but that doesn't need to be a scary thing at all.
There are commands to go in and grab all of those hotkeys, although it's hard to learn, just sit down and learn hotkeys without having a function or goal in mind of what you want to do and why you're learning that information.
Control-Option-K, which will bring up your keyboard help. I'm very different probably from most people. I just go and I press keys, and I figure out what combinations of keys do. And then there are master lists of these commands. Control-Option-H will take you to a help menu, but I just played around with that keyboard help for a little while, and it helped a lot.
There are a couple places that are running VoiceOver trainings now, and the one I can think of off the top of my head is HandyTech North America. They're running a Mac Academy, and it's not cheap, but it's probably worthwhile training for anybody that wants to learn the Mac from scratch. Unless you're a tinker. If you're a tinker and you're patient and you want to mess around with the stuff, you can definitely get into it and be fun.
Are there people that need to learn it for the workplace? Are there workplaces adopting or pretty much running all Mac?
I haven't seen any.
If you have a MacBook or MacBook Pro, you can navigate with the trackpad also, so that decreases the number of keys you have to mess with.
Okay, well, let's talk about the trackpad. There's some things you can do, and there's some things maybe not.
Trackpad Commander is a new thing that came with Snow Leopard, and basically what it does is allow you to use iPhone-style commands on your multi-touch trackpad. I haven't had too much experience with it. I played with it a little bit, and I just found that I was so far ahead with the keyboard that I just gave up on the trackpad.
Used it like an iTunes. I click on the next when I'm going through just stations trying to find a, you know, radio station that's playing something I want to listen to, or maybe going through my music library or something. And Syrinx, it's good. You can swipe left and right and move through your messages. So there's some functions, but I find having it on, it's like all trackpad/mousepads. I either end up doing something and knocking myself out of the window I was in. Let's see, I got a text question here. Is it possible to play Blu-ray movies on the Mac?
I haven't seen a Blu-ray reader compatible.
No, I don't think they've put any Blu-ray DVD players in there yet, right? As far as I know, they haven't.
I don't think so.
So I don't know if you could do an external, maybe a FireWire or something, but it has not natively been put inside the Mac that I'm aware of.
I wouldn't guarantee that it's going to work because there are some decryption libraries that have to be in the OS for that to work.
Does iTunes have Blu-ray support?
No.
For some reason, I thought it did. Maybe it's specifically on the Windows side, though.
And maybe on Windows side.
Yeah.
You know what? I'll try it. We've got an external Blu-ray reader somewhere around. I'll dig it out and connect it and see if it works.
Any questions from our phone listeners this evening? Well, a very quiet group. Or maybe they don't hear me. I don't know. But anyway, okay. Well, we're down to about 2 or 3 minutes. Any important things that we neglected to cover, do you think?
Michael, I'm sorry. I keep doing
that. Go
ahead,
Jess. That's done. That's fine. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that, Michael, you mentioned the Rogue Amoeba developers, and they're great. I actually use Pulsar for XM Sirius Radio and love it. It works great. I didn't want the evening to get away without
mentioning. I'm glad you said that because someone told me they didn't know how to use it, so why don't you give a little insight? Was there anything you had to do, either switch your views or maybe wasn't adept enough with the Mac? Or
no, so basically it's set up kind of like a table, and there's a button to the left, and there are a lot of unlabeled buttons, but basically the unlabeled button, the first one that you interact with, is going to be the button that you press to go to that station. And so once you kind of get the layout, you actually have a ton of information. You have the station name, a description of the station, and then what's playing on that station. So there are unlabeled buttons that you, you know, like an iPhone app, you just kind of have to figure out what they are, and then you'll know. So it's a great application. It works really well.
Have they been asked to label those buttons?
I'm not sure. I went through and just did the custom labels.
Well, I looked today, and they actually got a beta, so you might want to go up there and say, if you email, you can get the 2.0 beta, and this would be the time to put your 2 cents in and get accessibility built into that bad boy. So you might go back to rogueamoeba.com and click on the announcing beta 2.0 of Pulsar or whatever, and then get involved.
So I'll mention something real quick, and this will be a real quick one-minute geeky thing. What's nice about VoiceOver in OS X is that anyone developing applications using standard Cocoa Elements, which is the UI designer that Apple implements, if they use standard elements and they type the labels in where they have spaces for them, the application is accessible, period.
Okay, very good. Well, my final question for the two of you, if you had to live with one, people hate questions like that, so it's not a real world scenario, but if you had to, whatever dictates that you had to live with one, the Mac or Windows, which one would it be?
I've only used the Mac for about 4 months now, and I would say the Mac. I feel like there's a lot I can do with the Mac. I love using my computer when I'm on the road to do music, videos, all that kind of stuff. So entertainment-wise, it's great. I feel like productivity, I can do enough on it to justify it, and I can still run Windows. It's a win-win for me with the Mac.
So if I only had to live with one and I wasn't allowed to cheat and run Windows on my Mac, I think I would have to go with Windows just because of work and the fact that, you know, I wouldn't have a job without Windows. So unfortunately, that's the side I got to come down on.
Coming up, we're going to be talking about Microsoft Office. We want to address that. Google's doing a lot of interesting stuff.
Google's got some interesting stuff going on.
Yes, and we have some concerns. We want to make sure that accessibility and access technology is thought of at the beginning and not thrown on as an element after the fact. So that's something that we're going to be looking at. So with that, I think we're going to put the wraps on Tech Chat 63. I thank all of you for your questions and comments this evening. Join us every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, or 6 p.m. Pacific for Serotalk Tech Chat. This concludes another Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. Until we meet again, stay connected and stay directed.